We tell our athletes all the time, you don't have to say yes to every deal. Every deal may not be for you.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Jannard Estelle, the Director of Player Management and NIL at George Mason University. Coach Estelle has carved out an impressive career in college basketball, beginning his journey as a team manager before steadily working his way up through the ranks. Along the way, he gained valuable experiences at multiple stops, including his time at Spring Hill College, where he also suited up as a player. His ability to build relationships, connect with student athletes, and understand the business side of basketball has allowed him to thrive in both operations and development roles. While at George Mason, he plays a key part in guiding student athletes through the ever-changing landscape of NIL while ensuring they have the resources to succeed both on and off the court. His unique career path is a testament to persistence, versatility, and a deep passion for the game. Estelle's journey highlights how non-traditional roles in basketball can lead to major opportunities in the industry. In this episode, we discuss the skill sets you should look to have when working in the NIL and fundraising side of basketball, growing in the industry from a team manager to director of player management, and some more education on the NIL landscape in college athletics. Please welcome to the podcast, Jannard Estelle. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. What's up, coaches? Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Today, we have the Director of Player Management and NIL at George Mason University, Coach Jannard Estelle. Coach Estelle, welcome to the podcast. What's up?
What's going on, man? I appreciate you guys for having me. I'm a big fan of Rising Coaches, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
And especially, first off, we appreciate you being on here. And I know it seems like you're excited, so definitely, regardless, just be able to chop it up and talk is always fun for us. But from your side of things, as I mentioned, being the player management, being with NIL, that's obviously something huge to talk about. And I'm sure a lot of interest will come from this episode, especially just for that fact. Also, people want to learn about you, right? Don't get me wrong. But to be able to talk about that side of things and enlighten people more on the NIL perspective, the player management side. So we'll dive into that. But as I said, let's cover a little bit about what you have done, your career, because it is a pretty unique career. I know you ultimately playing community college, go on to Spring Hill, and then ultimately start your first position at Troy University. So he's a manager with the team, ends up going on and then moving up the ranks. I know you've worked in different things, development, which is great. And I have a lot of questions about the development side, I will say personally. But then again, going from Troy, some stops in between to being at George Mason. But first, was coaching always the end point for you, or was the fundraising advancement NIL side? And how did you transition from the coaching into what you're doing now?
Yeah, so coaching was not the end point. When I was a grad assistant at Spring Hill College, people used to always ask me, like, okay, you're in grad school. What are you going to do with your master's? And I'm like, man, I got to start giving these people like a better answer. So I'm like, well, once I'm done, I always used to mention like, in coaching, like I always said that, but I didn't know what that looked like. I just knew that it would be something in athletics. I didn't know if it would be athletic administration or what the case may be, but I would always say, once I'm done coaching, I want to do X, Y, and Z. And it just depends on who asked me that question, how I would answer it. I would say, once I'm done coaching, I would love to eventually be an AD at some point, but I didn't know like exactly what that looked like. But one thing led to another, and I always kept an open mind with how I approach things. So I guess me being in development to start off, and so when I started at George Mason, Katie Pate, who was my former boss, she was also a former coach. She's at App State. She was at the Division I level. She was at App State, Georgia State, Marshall. But she took me under her wing in the development world. And I'm like, I don't have that much experience, but she was like, you do, you just don't know. A lot of things you did at the junior college level or as a coach period, you've done, you just don't know it yet. And that kind of sat, I'm like, you know what? She may have the point. So once I started in development, I'm like, wow, like it's a, like fundraising, half the battle is having relationships with people. That's literally half the battle. Because if you have a relationship with them, then they're going to trust you and they're going to want to give. Because people give because they want to give, not because you say some fancy words that make them give. Like they're going to give because they want to, they want to support. It's just, they just want to see how authentic you are, how natural and organic you are as a person before they do make that give. It just one thing led to another. I knew at some point it would, coaching wouldn't be end all be all. I knew I would have some type of other endeavors I want to chase.
What does that look like on a day-to-day basis? Because you're balancing both, it sounds like. You're doing the, obviously, the relationship side with the NIL stuff. And I know there's only, you can only do so much up to that, up to a point, because the collective has their role as well. So it sounds like you're probably maybe the liaison between the collective and the program. But what's a typical 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. look like for you?
Me being in the NIL space now is different. Every day is different, which I love. It's a fun job. It doesn't really feel like a job because a lot of my days consist of me going out and meeting with different businesses or meeting with different CEOs about ways that get involved, ways that they can promote their brand and market themselves by working with different student athletes that we have. I mean, at the mid-major level, it's different. We look at NIL a little different. We don't look at it as a Power 5, P4 may look at it. We look at it as more student athlete development with that. Community leaders, we're developing professionals, we're developing good communicators, and we want to use that to create opportunities for our student athletes once the ball does stop bouncing, because obviously the percentage of playing at the pro level is already low. It's even lower at the mid-major level. So we want to use NIL as student athlete development. So most of my days consist of meeting with different businesses, companies. Some days I work with our development team to create different fundraising strategies that we can use for NIL. Some days consist of me just being at our men's basketball practice or our women's basketball practice. So that way they know who I am. They know they can be comfortable with me. So when NIL questions do come about, they'll feel comfortable with coming to me about those things. So just being available, being open, being accessible to them.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like I think most people probably, they look at NIL and it's not the same for everybody. Like you said, at the P4 level now, it's typically a big transaction or a series of transactions that lead to this amount. Right. And you guys actually have to get creative, and that might be parlaying four or five things for a certain player that come up to a certain amount, as opposed to the actual, it's a combination of cash and benefits, as opposed to at the P4 level. A lot of times it's like Randy Moss used to say, straight cash, homie. You know? Yeah. So yeah. It's that way for you guys, though. So you have to be creative. But I love what you're saying, because when a player's got to go interact with a local car dealership at your level, and maybe that's the use of a car for its academic school year period or whatever it is, it seems like they get a jump start at learning professionalism, because you don't want to show up to a meeting with that car dealer with a sweatsuit on. Right. You know, you actually want to show up with a polo and slacks. And so you're actually, it's a great way to jumpstart them into professionalism. You're going to be professionals for somebody at some point. Why not get a jump on it now?
And with that, my direct supervisor, our senior deputy athletics director, Ashton Henderson, he oversaw the NIL program at Michigan State, and they won many awards. So I'm happy I have him to lean on, as well as our athletic director, Marvin Lewis, who has a phenomenal mindset and vision when it comes to these things. So with that, we have what's called our NIL ecosystem. And within that is it's entrepreneurship, it's business etiquette, it's personal branding, marketing, how to read contracts, how to negotiate contracts. So with all those things, we provide NIL education to our athletes. That way they are prepared, because when those opportunities do come about, they need to know what's their pitch, how to follow up, how to talk to a business owner, those type of things. We don't want to just throw them out in the fire and expect them to, you know, be successful. And we had last month we had a NIL business summit where we invited just all local businesses to come to get educated on NIL. What is it? How are we using it at Mason? How does it affect all of our coaches and all of our sports programs? And it was a really good turnout. We had over 25 different CEOs come, and we have a lot of momentum right now in the NIL space at Mason. So we're just looking to build off that and take it to the next level.
Nice. Yeah, a lot of thank you notes are right there. No, that's good. That's good, man. No, and because this is, you have every recruiting visit, like you're a part of that now as well, right? Because parents need to understand what this stuff is about. So it's not just whatever the players absorb is going to be about maybe 15-20% of it, because they're thinking, man, like, how much am I going to play? They still want to know that part. But this part, this is big for parents to get educated on it. Education is really the key word, as opposed to what's our sell with NIL. Selling sounds, you know, it's a little bit, I don't know what the word is. You're actually talking about somebody's life and career. So sales is probably not the best. Education always seems to be a better word to use to encompass it all.
I got to say, too, the nice part about it is it's not like you just have a advancement or development background. You've, as I mentioned, you've been a manager at Troy. You were a grad assistant at Spring Hill. You have assistant coaching at Pearl River and Chipola. And you have the background of a basketball coach as well. So you know how to talk on both sides of things, which is great. And especially the ever-changing landscape now. The reason I love this side so much, and I don't really say it too much on here, but I work in development right now at my university and still an assistant basketball coach. So this is definitely a side that I navigate through myself, obviously on a smaller scale at a Division III school. But for you, just going from a coaching perspective to stepping into a development side, a fundraising side, advancement, what do you think was like one of the hardest transitions or hardest parts to be able to go take off that coaching hat and be more on the development side?
I would say it wasn't hard. It's just more of a challenge, just embracing the new role. Like, you're so used to doing something one way now, like all of a sudden, like it's a whole career change and you're having to, even in the way you dress, you have to dress professionally now. You have to properly send emails. Like, I wasn't used to all that when I first started. So that was a bit of a change for me, but I just like to let coaches know, especially from going from coach to administrator, like I let them know that I'm available and I'm accessible outside of work hours. As a coach, it's 24 hours, 7 days a week. But, and that's what I'm used to. But here, everyone cares about work-life balance. Everyone, you know, after they want to enjoy their weekend. When I talk to coaches, I'm like, look, you can text me at 10 o'clock at night or you can text me at 7 o'clock in the morning. I want you to know, like, I'm in full support of what you're wanting to do, what you're trying to do. So I give them that access, but I would say, yes, that the most challenging thing was just like small things of sending emails within 24 hours and embracing the fundraising aspect of how we do it here at Mason. And the conversations are different. I look at it as, and Katie, my old boss, she said this too. She was like, you're still, as far as coaching, when you're a recruit, you're selling a product. Like, you're selling your school, you're selling the head coach, you're selling whatever, the playing style. It's the same thing in fundraising. You're just selling a different component. So I took that with it. That's a really good point. Like, it makes the transition easier. It makes those conversations easier.
Yeah. And like you said, it still gets back to people, right? If somebody wants to give, they're going to give, but it's helpful for them to feel like a person's authenticity or an organization's authenticity, because then that helps them feel comfortable in the why they're giving. They want to give, but it's nice for them to know why. That why is because, man, these people are authentic. I really see how this can both help our business and help a young student athlete that we maybe partner with, or group of student athletes. So whenever people see the why, then I'm sure that's probably the final nudge. Because if they want to give, once they hear the why, then that's okay. Now I'm in with both feet.
Absolutely. I think it's also being intentional. With certain donors, man, you don't want to go in and look at them as just a money sign. You want to actually human beings as people, getting to know them. Like, for example, they may be big into watching movies, where a new movie just came out. Let me text he or she and say, yeah, this new movie just came out. Have you seen it yet? Are you going to see it? So small things like that, just knowing people's story. That way you can use that in an authentic way to create and cultivate better relationships with these donors.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately going back to what you guys said. It's recruiting. Yeah, how do I get this person to want to be able to work with me? How do I get them to want to be able to? And obviously, it's a genuine relationship. It's not like you're just doing that just for the heck of it, but it's definitely recruiting in that aspect for sure. With that being said, having the development side, having the coaching side, like, what kind of skill sets do you feel are or I'm trying to think of the right word there. Like, what kind of skill sets do you feel would be good to be able to have for somebody in this type of position? Because now I know I've talked with other coaches before, and within the last year, they said there's positions opening up all at different universities for positions such as yourself and a lot more. I think there's one school I talked to, they said they were starting about 7 to 10. And now that was a large scale school, I'd say first, but yeah, they're starting positions all across different universities. Somebody could have interest in getting into that. Just what kind of skill sets do you feel are good when working in this kind of capacity on a fundraising side?
I would say one, being personable, being someone that people can talk to, people can, or they feel some type of comfort around. Obviously, I just said being intentional with how you do things. I would think one thing that goes under the radar is being available. I think that's an underrated trait, to being available, being open to, being available for conversations, meetings, whatever the case may be. Just having that availability goes a long way, because obviously life happens with all of us, but showing that you're available at the most vulnerable times can be the difference in a lot of areas. But yeah, and then obviously, especially with donors, like people laugh when I say this, but just smile. Like, my former boss.
Powerful thing.
Just smile.
Powerful thing, man.
You're welcome. So just having that demeanor about yourself for people to want to have a conversation with you. So I think those things resonate with me and the success I've had in the fundraising aspect, and even in the NIL aspect. Like, plays hand in hand, because a lot of NIL deals with fundraising. You still have to, especially when you're not at a high major program, you still have to have some type of fundraising component to NIL with the way these players get paid now. So I think all those things connect the dots to being able to have success, not only in the fundraising lane, but the NIL lane as well.
Talk about because this happens in recruiting. Obviously happens in life, happens with job searches, things like that. But sometimes you get either a no or a not right now. And talk about the importance of follow-up. So now the way you treat them isn't conditional on whether you got a yes or a no. Because sometimes a no or not right is a not right now. When you reach out to someone and you want to get them involved, and they say, you know what, that sounds good, but get back to us. Just talk about the importance of that follow-up and how important that is, because now, a year later, this might be somebody that wants to jump in.
Yeah, that's a good point. The same way you treat them before is the same way you treat them afterwards. That thing changes. And going in, especially the line of work we do, you have to know, like, you're going to get no's. The same way in recruiting, when you're coaching, you're going to get no's. So you have to be prepared for that. And I think just the same way coaches recruit, the kid says, I'm not ready to commit now. You're still going to recruit them because kids change their mind all the time. And it's just the same way with donors or boosters. We've had that experience. I've experienced that personally a couple times within the year I've been at Mason, with someone that they're not in the position to give what needs to be given at the time. We still court them the same way. We still cultivate their relationship. We still build with them. We still communicate with them. We still invite them to certain events. Now, this guy, he just got a new job. He's ready to commit, and he just signed his first gift agreement. The thing is, that follow-up is more important than the initial conversation, because they're gonna pay attention to how you follow up with them, how you present yourself to them moving forward. They said no. So you got to think about the let me make sure I'm doing, crossing all T's and dotting all I's with this person, just because they're going to see how I treated them if they did say no. So I just think having that mindset of knowing, hey, this is just not right now. This is not a no. And having that mindset will help you create success for yourself in that lane.
Yeah, 100%. And because you never can assume you're the only school that's talking to this business, because there's a bunch of schools like you guys in your area. Like, other people are hitting them too. So yeah. Like, that's why, how authentic you are, and you just never know which little thing might be the difference maker.
Right.
Maybe it is the way they felt when the follow-up, man, they didn't wrinkle up one bit. Okay, let me think about Mason. All right. Whereas another school may not even reach out to them again when they say no, because they said no, I haven't heard from them in 3 months. So there's a competition. I think the competitiveness that you have as a coach actually bleeds into this as a transferable skill, right? Because you're trying to say, whenever a team starts a season, why will we be different than everybody else? And why would an opponent worry about us?
Exactly.
And so you're thinking the same thing in fundraising. Like, why will Mason be different? And why are people, how can we be a factor where people think, man, oh, Mason's been talking to them? Oh, boy. We better be careful. They're pretty good over there. You know what I mean? Like, you want that to get out. So I think the competitiveness that you had as a coach has probably found its way to the side of the thing, too.
Yeah. Being a coach has, before getting into athletic administration, has helped me so much. Like, the transition has been so much smoother. But people realize it's because the stuff you do as a coach, especially at the junior college level where you're doing more or less, is you're the jack of all trades. So once you come to, especially a university, Division I like Mason, and you have all these different resources where you're like, man, like, I was working doing X, Y, and Z without these resources. Now I have these resources, like, you look like sky's the limit for you. So being a coach helped me out tremendously in this space. And with that, like you said, the competitiveness, also just having that as a coach, is you're going 100 miles per hour. It's very urgent. Who you work for is intense. It's fast paced. So coming to this lane, it's wild. I have more time than what I realized.
Right.
The transition is much, much easier. I would say anyone who's in coaching or eventually wants to get out but still working in athletics, to come on the athletic administration side, because they will be well more prepared and equipped than what they realize.
Sounds like the reason why businesses hire athletes, because they've had to live two lives in one life. Mm. And so, you know, when an athlete applies, I know if I ran a business and I see athlete, student athlete, I'm going to nudge them to the front of the pile, because
no,
what this person's had to do on a daily basis, from a high level of responsibility and punctuality, being on time, handling their business, communicating with all different types, teammates, coaches, professors, athletic trainers, academic people, strength coach. It's great that you're with us on this deal, because it's really good for coaches to know that you can be really good at one thing, and you can also jump to somebody else, something else, and be really good at that other thing.
Right.
That there are multiple lanes, that you can change lanes. Just because you change lanes doesn't mean you have to change speeds.
Exactly.
You know, and you can still be a hell of a driver on the left lane versus being driving in the right lane. So it's great that you're on here to share that, because this landscape is changing fast.
Yeah. It's a lot of transferable traits between from coach to athletic administration, a lot of transferable traits. So I think it's very, very unique.
And I'll even add too, like, you have to know the side of business in order to do this. So if you're talking to somebody who works in business or a CEO from, as you were mentioning, like, one, you have to be able to talk about the business cycles or the quarters that they're in. That's one thing that I've learned, because sometimes businesses aren't like, okay, hey, the year's wrapping up, so let's get back next year once the year starts. And when they say next year, they don't necessarily mean school year, because they're not a school. So they're working more in business cycles, their pay, how much, how they cycle, their accounting, all of that. Like, they obviously, oh, we can donate in the next year. We already did our donations for this past year and stuff. And then one thing, going back to when you were saying about following up, Al, the one thing that I learned too is, once a company says no to you, how we were talking about that, at least that I've started to learn, was if a company says no to you, always double back with them a year later and then show them the success that the other companies have had. This is what the people, this is the marketing that they have had. This is what the other companies have had. This is what the other company's success. We've had X amount of people that show up to our games. And then you show them, oh, this is the revenue they generated just by coming to our games and by sold, right? And now they're going to be, oh, you know what? This guy comes with facts and numbers. And now the conversation completely changes, because they see the numbers in front of them.
No, you're absolutely right. And to your point, what you just said, I also use that when I speak with businesses on NIL, because I look at it now. Hey, I give them examples. Even for our NIL summit we had, I had a bunch of just different NIL activations from Mason, some from like bigger schools, Ohio State here, Michigan. But I told them, like, this is the success that they've had with the same thing I'm telling you. So now I left that presentation. I said, a year from now, I want to have all Mason examples up here. So when I'm out with different companies and businesses, I can say, hey, this is a local business who executed an NIL deal with this student athlete. And now look what it has them. Now they're there. Now this restaurant is our official breakfast spot or brunch spot. Now this company here is our official like moving company. Now this company here is our official construction company. So it's giving them a train of thought. Like we, like I tell companies certain stuff we don't have. We don't have an official, like Mason doesn't have an official dentistry, or Mason, we don't have an official, just thinking of different ways that they can get them mm-hmm. get on to want to commit to
a car wash.
Exactly. We're still open to to your point, that's a good point, because it's a lot of it's a lot of good examples that you can get from that one. So a year later, especially when someone does say no, you come back like, hey, we have X, Y, and Z now. Oh, you followed up, like your follow-up. So that's a good point.
I don't wanna get you in trouble. So please cut me where you can. But is there anything you could share from that presentation that you gave to the businesses? Like obviously you don't have to display anything, but was there any like knowledge that you think would be beneficial for people that you can share?
Yeah, for their presentation, it was mainly the start of it was showing what NIL is, because some CEOs who came, they may not know what NIL is. So we kind of explained what NIL is, the impact it makes in the new college landscape, how it started, where is it going, where do we see it going. And then I also gave different NIL activations. Like I talked about in-kind partnership. That got a lot of small businesses thinking, because in-kind partnership is when a student athlete promotes your brand, in exchange, they get free products and free services. That has nothing to do with anything money related. So I made that point for the small business, or for the bigger businesses, I showed different examples of co-branded partnerships. So where we can work hand in hand together. So different NIL activations, NIL education. I talked about the house settlement, how did NIL get to where it's at today? And then I told them how we're using NIL at Mason with those educational series that we have. We have an educational program that we have for NIL. So we bring in outside experts, or we have cross promotional departments come across campus who come and speak to our athletes about different things. Like for example, financial literacy. We had cost of business this on our campus come in and speak to the teams about that. So that's pretty much what it was. It was like a 15-20 minute presentation, and it got people's a lot of business mind wondering what that looks like for them.
Yeah, for sure. Talk about this, man. I don't think at the high majors they really don't have to do this, because you have there's a position for just about everything. At the high major level, there's somebody handling it. But at the mids and lows, and we may have obviously a lot of people that follow Rising Coaches to be mids, lows, D2s, obviously Dougie's at the D3 level, where you've got to be more versatile as a coach, and you've got to be more active in some of these things, because you just don't have the benefit of somebody, we got somebody for that. It's like there's an app for that, right? You don't always have a person for that at the D2, D3, smalls and mid levels. Lows and mids. Talk about the importance of when a student athlete latches on with a business. So let's say it's either an in-kind or a co-branding relationship. Talk about how important it is for people in your role to get student athletes to understand the sense of urgency to just be diligent in that relationship. Because if it's a first-time in-kind relationship, they're literally setting the tone for people coming behind them. And how that goes is going to affect the next, how that business feels about wanting to do it again. There's just it gets back to the professionalism thing, right? Like how you got to be on time for stuff, or how you dress. Go buy yourself a blazer and slacks. If you're speaking somewhere, right? So just talk about how important that is, because student athletes, you're literally setting the tone for the power of these relationships moving forward, especially the ones if it's a business jumping in for the first time.
Right. I think that's very important. That's why some businesses do want to start off small with in-kind partnerships, because they want to see how it's going to work. And that's why we try to prepare our student athletes as much as possible. So when those opportunities do come, they're prepared and they're ready to execute on them. With that, with these different NIL activations, we always have our student athletes partner with different businesses of what they're passionate about. So we're not going to partner with this student athlete who's heavily invested in the restaurant business, partner with someone who's in a construction business. We try to find what they're passionate about. So it's the relationship, the NIL activation is more authentic, is more organic. That way those type of relationships and partnerships can be successful, and they can set some the next athlete up for that opportunity. So we're big on passion. Like for all of our student athletes, we go in and we get what they're passionate about, what their interest is, and what their major is. That way we have these things to present. Business, like, hey, I know your business deals with cybersecurity. This guy here he's a business major. He wants to get into cybersecurity once he graduates. That's a relationship there where we can connect the dots and form an NIL activation out of that. So we look at it as student athletes who are passionate about certain things. We're not showing them different. We tell our athletes all the time, you don't have to say yes to every deal. Every deal may not be for you. So you don't want to mess it up for the next person.
Yeah, exactly. No, that makes sense. Because there is a domino effect to this deal as you're trying to build this, especially we're only a couple of years into this stuff. What Mason looks now NIL-wise after a few years into this versus how you want Mason to look 10 years from now. Man, that's going to be a totally different ballgame. But how student athletes handle this now is going to affect what 10 years looks like from now.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's a big point. I think 5 years from now, how college athletics will look, coaches will be more involved and heavily involved in player retention, just as much as they are with recruiting, because they're like, all right, keeping them. So how do we keep them? How do we use NIL to our advantage? How do we utilize the educational piece to NIL that a lot of other schools, especially in our conference and just at the mid-major level period, aren't doing? So we use that as a recruiting tool, and we'll continue to as we build this foundation for our NIL program. Those different things have an effect on how we move forward with NIL, and it's what I'm seeing, and even stories that my former players have had about NIL and different deals that they've had that have kept them where they are instead of going to another school is like those stories there. Those are the success stories that I like to hear and I can use to our advantage here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it will long term. It will keep more kids in school over the course of the next 5 to 10 years. So I think that'll be definitely a big side effect of this deal. No doubt.
Keep kids in school, and then some of them will still be in school for 7 years, as we have seen. I've seen a couple of those, and it's just, you're 26 years old, dude. Come on. You got to hang it up eventually. Now, that's Division III. I guess if you're making almost a couple hundred thousand, that's a different story.
Yeah. That's a real thing, though. I saw Calipari was in a video talking about that. Like he had an 18-year-old on his team, and he said we had a 26-year-old. Think about that. 18-year-old closing out on a 26-year-old. Come on, man.
Which is possible now.
He said if kids could stay in school till they're 32, they'd stay until they're 32 because it's, the real world's going to offer a pay cut with a lot of these guys. Yeah, it's going to be a pay cut in the real world.
We hear this a lot. This is the most amount of money that they could possibly ever make with their career job may not pay what they're paying out. And then it's coming fast. So it's like they're trying to take advantage in every way possible with this.
And that's not to say later in their career. They might later in their career, if you obviously you advance in management, whether it's entrepreneurship or CEO, VP, obviously guys are some people are going to roll into those things, but not the first, 5 years out of college. That's first 5-10 years out of college. Sometimes it's a grind for a little bit.
No,
so no doubt. Yeah, it will be different with some of these pay stubs. It's going to be looking a little different, but thank goodness for it right now. It's good that we have it now, because again, I just think it's such a golden opportunity to jumpstart their professionalism. And that's really everything that you've been talking about. It's their understanding that it's a really big world out there outside of athletics. That's the other thing they're starting to realize too.
Sure. And in NIL, I tell people it's for everybody. It's, you don't have to be the best athlete on the team. It's just how creative you are, how you manage your social media. Look at Livy Dunn. She was like the 14th best player on the team, and she's making all the success she's had off NIL. She wasn't the best player or the most talked about. Like this is how do you utilize what you have your brand, your social media.
I think they had a walk on at LSU on the basketball team, was making like $500,000. Really creative dude. He was doing a lot of TikTok stuff. Did you ever see that LSU NIL documentary?
Oh, yeah, I did. The Money Game, yeah, on Prime, yep.
Yeah. And that guy was doing a bunch of TikTok stuff. He's making like $500,000. He barely got in the game.
Yep.
Never got in the game.
No. Things are going real good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a walk-on. But the guy he partnered with, he was making videos with some of their track stars, and he was helping other student athletes do their stuff. And like, it just caught fire. He's making $500,000 as a walk-on.
Guy's going to be a CEO one day if he's helping other people. Oh, so that's insane.
He's brilliant. This dude was brilliant, man.
Coach, obviously we like to tie it up with one way, and typically that is just a final question to give you everybody a general synopsis of your career and just in a brief way. But if we were to put you back into your first coaching position, going back to really being a manager at Troy and then knowing what you know now being over at GM, what advice would you give your younger self, whether it's coaching advice or even from the like player management side? What advice would you give your younger self in this profession?
I would say, especially starting out, be more well-rounded. Create those relationships earlier on. Don't be that person especially as a coach, don't be that person to come every time you come into the administration office, you need something or you want something. Like sometimes to build those relationships, the best way I can put this is with those relationships, make sure that you are actually building authentic relationships and not coming to people as just, you just need something. Because as an administrator now, looking at it how I look at it now, you can see that. Here, our coaches do a really good job of building relationships. They come in and we just talk. They don't need anything. They don't ask for anything. So I would just say being more well-rounded. And to that point, with these donors and these other people who support and these fans that do support your program, just having some type of relationship with them, because not every year you're gonna win. So the year that you aren't winning, do you still have that same support? Do you still have that same support from the fans, from the donors? You'll know that by how you treated them or how well you built those relationships with them. So just being more well-rounded in that capacity for them to support you, whether you're doing good or bad, because that does matter. Some coaches, they're just all about winning, which is fine, but you're all about winning. What happens when that one year you're not winning? Do you have those relationships with those fans, those supporters, those donors for them to still want to keep you around? So I'll just say to that point, just being more well-rounded, more balanced, with not just being narrowed into one thing.
Perfect. No, I completely agree.
Yeah. Tell them thank you. Tell them thank you at every opportunity. And master the art of passing out t-shirts. I used to love keeping t-shirts in my trunk. Yeah. Any business I went to, whether it's my favorite steakhouse or car wash, just places around town, I just kept camp t-shirts. I'd snag about 20, 25 extra and just car wash guys and wipe your tires down, do the detail, you take care. I'm telling you,
man. You were doing NIL before it even existed.
That stuff travels now. I don't know. I wouldn't get anything from it. Here's the thing, though. I knew how it made them feel. And people forget how they never forget how you make them feel. I still had to pay for the car wash, but still, it was just like, man, appreciate you guys for what you do. And that little stuff travels, man. I'm telling you, bartender that hands you that drink, you hand him a or a camp t-shirt, and all of a sudden, those drinks are a little bit stronger, but they're still good. Of course, you're double every now and then instead of a single. Yeah. But hey, man, we appreciate you jumping on here, man. And it was so good. Because, like I said, the landscape's changing, and we're asking players to be versatile and more well-rounded, and it starts with us. Starts with us. I think if we continue to model it as what we do as coaches, that, hey, it's possible to kill it in one side and then kill it on the other side.
Absolutely.
So we appreciate you jumping on, man. This was really good. Really good.
Thank you guys for having me. Thank you guys for having me. I'm always a big fan and supporter of Rising Coaches and what you all do. So really appreciate you guys as well.
Yes, sir. No, and I want to make sure to say as well to Patty Medina, of course, another person. I know she's been the plug connecting us to a lot of people, but obviously getting us connected. One, just being able to learn your story, learn your experiences, but then, of course, just being able to get connected too. I'm definitely appreciative of that. And
big shout out. I hate to cut you off.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I definitely have to shout out Patty Medina for just her support and for recommending for me for this. So shout out to her. I'm sure she's going to listen, and that's a person you should definitely if you don't know her, because she's a AD.
Yeah, she's been on. She's been on before, and she's handed us some layups with people that we've had on the pod. So she's like a two-legged search firm herself. She's special. Patty's a beast.
No, but we do appreciate you for being on here. And of course, for everybody else out there, thank you all for tuning in. That does it and wraps up another episode, Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, and all you coaches, as we always say, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Take care. And by this point, hopefully the season's going to be starting off well for people who are now going to be starting in the season. So thank you all for tuning in again. We'll talk soon, coaches. Bye.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.